You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see?
I keep referring to Obama as the magic Negro.
Do you like what you see now?
Well, suck on this.
It's just a mirror, America.
Shared sacrifice by everybody.
What could it do to you except reflect your image?
I did nothing wrong at the Minneapolis airport.
The Majority Report.
Far more credible to me than PBS
and Frontline.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, December 14th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Punk Boy in SF. Jutao? He is a Ustreamer who was at the occupations of the ports just the other day. He will give us a sense of what happened there. May also hear from, I don't know, we may hear from Jeff Smith. He got out of jail last night. They kept him... They kept the New York occupiers in jail for over 24 hours.
It was, I believe, 36 hours at the end of the day. They got out just before 1 a.m.
36 hours. We got a post of a picture at majority.fm of Jeff Smith being arrested. And there is really an amazing video of Justin Weeds, who you'll remember was on this program, I believe it was September 19th, because it was just... the first Monday after the start of Occupy Wall Street. And he was on this program as an early organizer of Occupy Wall Street. There is pretty stunning video. I tweeted this out. I retweeted it from the other 99 last night. He is standing in the World Financial Center. The protests are going on. He's holding a laptop and in one hand, and a camera in another. He is streaming what is was happening there. Now, so you have to understand, he has limited mobility. He's obviously not using his hands in any way to be aggressive towards anybody. He's standing there shooting an incident with the police from behind him. The video clearly shows this. A cop grabs him. He's standing in a bunch of people. The police clearly targeted him because he was live streaming. Grabs him from behind. Someone else who's there, I believe someone else with Occupy Wall Street, grabbed his computer from him because the cop was now putting him in a headlock and dragging him down. Justin passes off his computer and his camera. The police then continue to drag him down to the ground, throw him down on the ground, and then three of them sit on him. He's not resisting anything, as shocked, I think, as he was, because it was completely, he was completely grabbed from behind. There was no way for him to anticipate that he was going to be arrested because there was nothing he was doing. The video is quite explicit, and many of the people, apparently, who were arrested were of the media team. So it's quite clear the police were targeting specific people to arrest. And, you know, I imagine Jeff right now is sleeping. But if he wakes up, maybe he'll call into the program.
I was hearing that they tried to convince them that they weren't going to get released last night unless they opted in to have their retina scanned.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, we will get updates on this. If it won't happen today, it will happen tomorrow. We'll be talking to Jutao a little bit later in the program. staying on Occupy Wall Street, apparently there was a meeting set up yesterday in Washington between representatives of Occupy Wall Street in New York and perhaps some in Occupy D.C. It's unclear. And the Congressional Progressive Caucus. The meeting was unclear as to when it was set up for, but it was definitely scuttled late yesterday. The reasons are also unclear, although apparently from the perspective of Occupy Wall Street New York, at least the stated goals that they understood were to discuss with the members of the Progressive Caucus the way in which cities have been treating the protesters. You know, there's been an incredible amount of police violence and aggression. Understand, there is not, I mean, a single incident that I'm aware of. Although I guess following some of the Oakland protests in the first time that they came in and threw tear gas, following that, there were some instances of property destruction, very small. But beyond that, when you think about the amount of protests around the country, and certainly in New York City, there has been no recorded acts, as far as I'm aware of, perhaps there have been, of protesters being violent in the course of protesting, or these activists being violent in the course of protesting. And so clearly, the way in which the police have dealt with them has gone beyond what was necessary. It has functioned as a deterrent to protest and functioned as a punishment to protest, rather than the way that civil disobedience should be dealt with. The Progressive Caucus understood, supposedly, that the meeting was about discussing such things as dealing with corporate personhood and possible legislative remedies. It's unclear what the real story is here, but apparently the meeting was leaked by either members of the caucus or somebody, or frankly, Democratic strategists who have a problem with Occupy Wall Street to scuttle the meeting. This story in Roll Call quotes, and this is hilarious, Kelly Bingell. She says, Democrats should reject Occupy Wall Street as the spokesman for the 99%. The chance of those guys going out and voting or encouraging anyone else to vote is very low, she said. And just a little background on Kelly. She was a former chief of staff. She was a chief of staff of the former Senator Blanche Lincoln, Democrat from Arkansas, who lost because she was so had such a tin ear when it came to unions and other progressive issues. She is now, I don't know what she's doing. I imagine she's a lobbyist. Certainly, Kelly Bingell appears to be a lobbyist with the firm Melman. Melman, of course, being the, I believe if it's the same Melman, the former head of the RNC, whose electoral success very much, at least on a national level, attributable to demonizing gay people. And then it turns out he himself, surprise, was gay. So she's now a lobbyist and or works for a lobbying firm in Washington. And she's advising Democrats should really stay away from Occupy Wall Street. That in and of itself deserves a big surprise. But, you know, good. I don't think the value of Occupy Wall Street lies in its working within the context of the legislative system. That's the job, I am sure, members of the Progressive Caucus can figure out what legislation would be helpful. And if their agenda is simply to placate members of the Occupy movement, then what they should do is keep pushing legislation until the Occupy movement no longer feels it's necessary for them to be involved in activism. So I don't have any problem with that being scuttled. Meanwhile, for those people who say that Occupy Wall Street and Occupy protests and all of these protests around the world, it was the protester that was named Time Magazine's Person of the Year, including all of the protests that have gone on across the country. Now, I mean, excuse me, across the globe. And for listeners of this program, this rendition of this program, this is something that you've heard on this program since really early spring, that there was something that was going on in globally that was unique. Whether it was early in the year when we were talking about WikiLeaks and the growing online activism and hacktivists and how that led into the Arab Spring and how that led into the UK Uncut protests and how it led into the Los Indignados and the protests, the union protests in Madison and the Occupy protests that started in this country and then also were echoed around the world. But the upshot is it's already paying dividends in terms of job creators. The company that makes the long-range acoustic devices, those non-lethal weapons of crowd disbursement, LRAD Corp. of San Diego, is doing booming business. Booming business. The publicly traded company had record sales of $26 million in the 2011 fiscal year ending September 30, up 57% from a year earlier. Foreign and domestic military customers accounted for at least 58% of sales. The company said in December 5th, its year-end report sees that it sees increased commercial applications for LRAD in areas including law enforcement. I wonder what those areas are outside of law enforcement. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see protesters buy these things. Can you buy these?
I have no clue.
I would like to see if we can buy one. It would be an interesting experiment. What happens when the LRADs meet the LRADs? Meanwhile, this is a stunning story. It's an op-ed, really, in Forbes magazine. Well, should we talk about this right now? Yeah, I will talk about the payroll poison pill bill as the show progresses, perhaps in the better half of the program. But this story is really worthwhile because it dovetails with another report that is out in terms of education. It's written by a guy named Gene Marks in Forbes magazine. And I don't know anything about this guy. And perhaps his heart seems in the right place. But is this delusion by the establishment in this country, which is a big part of the problem? And, you know, I was on Radigan's program on Monday, and Radigan and I had our classic argument where he didn't want to hear about ideological differences. He wanted to talk about exclusively the extraction that's taking place by the banks and by the big insurance companies from our economy, i.e. the fact that they take more money out of our economy than they actually produce for our economy. But at the root of this extraction is not simply graft. It is not just that our politicians raise their money from these people. That is a big part of it. But it is they are of the same mentality. I don't think Gene Marks got paid by anybody to write this. Obviously, Forbes paid him, but to take this position, it is a mentality. It is an ideological mentality. And to ignore its existence is to do so at the peril of our society. He's talking about a president's speech that he gave in Kansas about inequality in America. And he's praising the president's speech. And he admits that the opportunities for the 99% have become harder to realize. He says, my kids are no smarter than similar kids their age from the inner city. My kids have it much easier than their counterparts from West Philadelphia. He presumably is in another part of Philadelphia. The world is not fair to those kids mainly because they had the misfortune of being born 2 miles away into a more difficult part of the world and with a skin color that makes realizing the opportunities that the president spoke about much harder. This is a fact in 2011. And I commend him for understanding this fact. But he goes on to write, if I were a poor black kid, I would first and most importantly, work to make sure I got the best grades possible. I would make it my number one priority to be able to read sufficiently. I wouldn't care if I was a student at the worst public middle school in the worst inner city. Even the worst have their best. Now think about this. If this middle-aged white man was a poor black child, what he would do is he would excel at school. And, he writes, I would use the technology available to me as a student. I know a few school teachers, and they tell me that many inner-city parents usually have or can afford cheap computers and internet service nowadays. If I was a poor black kid, I'd use the free technology available to help me to study. I'd become an expert at Google Scholar. I'd visit study sites like SparkNotes and CliffsNotes to help me understand books. I'd watch relevant teachings on Academic Earth, TED, and Khan Academy. I would also, when possible, get my books for free at Project Gutenberg and learn how to do research at the CIA World Factbook and Wikipedia to help me with my studies. If I were a poor black child, this is what I would do. Is this easy? No, it's not. It's hard, and it takes a special kind of kid to succeed. But it's not impossible. The tools are there, the technology are there, and the opportunities are there. Well, I have a question for Gene Marks. As a middle-aged white man who's not poor, why aren't you excelling more? Why are you just writing for Forbes? Why aren't you publishing Forbes? Why don't you own Forbes? Why aren't you a billionaire? If it was that much easier for you to do it, which you concede, why didn't you excel? Why weren't you the top of your class? Perhaps you were. And this is all you have to show for it? Why haven't you cured cancer? Why haven't you created world peace? You know what I would do if I was a poor black child? I would just become a millionaire. Because one day I'd be a poor black child, and the next day I'd be a rich black child. In Philadelphia, there are nationally recognized magnet schools. I would use the internet to research each one of these schools so I could find out how I could be admitted. I would find out the names of the admissions people and go to meet with them. If I were a poor black kid, I would make it my goal to get into one of these schools, or even a private school. Most have scholarship programs. If I were a poor black kid, I'd be using technology to research these schools on the internet too and making them know that I exist, that I get good grades, and I want to go to their school. If I was a poor black kid, I would get technical. I would learn software. I would learn to write code. The biggest challenge we face isn't inequality, it's ignorance. So many kids from West Philadelphia don't even know these opportunities exist for them. But you know, if Gene was a poor black child, he could be there to tell all these kids about it. From all the stuff that he gained from being a middle-aged white guy, he could impart that knowledge to him as a poor black child and tell the other poor black children. Technology can help these kids, but only if these kids want to be helped. Not just only if these kids want to be helped. The thing that he is missing here, the problem with this entire piece, no matter how well-intentioned, is that he completely ignores the role that government and society has in providing these poor black kids, or whomever it is, with the access and the awareness that it's going on. He turns this story into a moral play for the righteousness of the individual, when in fact this story is not about the righteousness of the individual, and he's so close to understanding it. But his ideology refuses to allow him to see that it is society's role to impart this knowledge to that poor black kid, because we cannot take the mindset of a middle-aged white guy who's writing for Forbes magazine and impart that knowledge into that poor black kid just because he wants to write an op-ed about it. It is the role of government to do this, and we are failing on that accord. Failing on it. I think just it's also much easier just for the poor black kid just to become a millionaire. Just jump ahead. And then he can find out about all that other stuff.
The poor black kids from West Philadelphia should just go live with their auntie and uncle in Bel Air.
Bingo! All right, folks, we got to take a break, and when we come back, we'll be talking to Ju Tao, or Punk Boy in SF on Twitter. He is an independent U streamer for Occupy San Francisco. Get his take on what happened during the port takeover. And after that, I've got stories on a new report that shows that class poverty really does make a difference in terms of education, despite the fact that the people in Forbes don't seem to understand that. We'll also go into the story about the payroll tax cut legislation. President Obama will be speaking in mere moments to announce the end of the Iraq war. I had a story on austerity in Europe and a new Lowe's in bigotry. All this and more. If you are a member of the Majority Report, you will hear all these stories. If you're not, and you're some obnoxious emailer who wants to email me and tell me, I don't care if the whole show goes away, even though I've been listening. Well, then you lose out. I'll talk more about that later. I'm in a bad mood about that, incidentally. All right, we'll be back in just a minute. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Ju Tao. He is an independent U streamer for Occupy SF. at Occupy SF, and you can find him at Punk Boy in SF on Twitter. Welcome to the program, Jatau.
Hey, how are you, Sam?
I'm doing good. So, all right. So, relate to us. Where were you on a Monday as there was as the ports were being shut down? What did you see?
Well, I'm not a morning person, so I got up about 10 o'clock. I had a guy from Wired who was doing a story, and so I took him with me. About 12, we got to Oscar Grant Plaza, which is the new the name that they had given to the plaza where Occupy Oakland was. And when we got down to the port at about 12:30 or so, a lot of the people who were there, the 1,500 or so that had shut down for the morning shift, had dispersed enough that the sheriff's department had been letting a few trucks in and out because there were a few longshoremen who didn't support us who had made their way there. So they did load a few trucks in the afternoon. So we basically ended up heading back to Oscar Grant Plaza for a lot of the speakers. Scott Olson, who a lot of you know was injured in one of the protests in Oakland, it was sort of like his one of his big first coming out days of being out and protesting with us. So he spoke, Angela Davis spoke, Dan Siegel, who used to be Mayor Gene Kwan's legal advisor who quit after the last big raid on Occupy Oakland, came and spoke and showed his support. And then basically we all went to West Oakland BART station from there. And right about 3-4 o'clock from West Oakland BART, we all marched over the Adeline Street Bridge to the port. And basically, once we showed with enough people again, we were able to hold down the port until 3 a.m. So I was basically streaming pretty much nonstop from about noon until 3 a.m.
So wait a second. So there were actually two separate port closings. Is that right?
Yeah, we had the one in the morning, I think, that started for, I think, a 5 a.m. shift-ish or right sometime around there. And then for the 5 p.m. shift that is the afternoon shift, there were the two closures that happened in Oakland.
So for the 5 a.m. shift, if the sheriff basically allowed a couple of trucks out, does that imply that there were a lot of truckers who were just simply not going out because they were supportive of it?
Well, I think the problem is that the media blacked out. There wasn't a lot of information in the mainstream, and especially like the national mainstream media completely blacked out a lot of the story. I mean, I heard that we did make Good Morning America for the first time, but you know, the Disney Corporation and all them don't seem to want to ever talk about it. So I think a lot of the truckers are very confused a lot, and I mean, I'm still a little torn on. You know, the little bit of hurt that we do cause to the independent truckers, but I think for the most part, most of the longshoremen were with us, even if the heads of the longshoremen are sort of, they have their hands tied and have to sort of just, you know, go against us when they do their press reports and everything.
Right. I mean, I think the union officials have to distance themselves from it basically because of Taft-Hartley for the most part.
Exactly.
And it's very difficult for them. There's a lot of legal jeopardy in terms of joining, at least officially, any type of work stoppage like that. And so the second shutdown went till 3 a.m. What were the police doing at this point?
Well, it was longer than 3 a.m. That was just when my streaming release showed up. So after like a good 15 hours of streaming, I had to call it quits, plus it was very cold.
I understand.
But it was basically a big dance party all night. I know that a lot of people were just like, it just looks like a big dance party out there. There was also a showing last night, a benefit for Occupy Oakland at the Grand Lake Theater. And I know the quote comes from somewhere else, but I think they used it again in D for Vendetta. Was like, if there's a revolution without dancing, that's not a part of the revolution that I want to be part of.
Right. I mean, who was that woman? I can't remember.
I can't remember exactly in the movie, but
no, it's not from the movie. It's I can't remember.
Yeah,
who it was,
it's
but
an
it's
old
a...
it's an old old quote, but yeah. So we had a big dance party out on the port for a long time. There was punk rock going. There were rappers. There was DJs running all night. It was pretty amazing.
And so what are the police doing at this point? I mean, is just too many people for them to deal with?
Yeah, I think because we had enough people, especially in Oakland, where we were sort of the people who called for the port closures. We have a lot of support from the people here. And also because Oakland has such a bad reputation now with their police. I mean, they've got a really corrupt police department here. and with injuring Scott Olsen and him being out there, they kept sort of a hands-off approach. They were we could see them in the distance, but they basically left us alone for the most part.
And so, what other organizing do you anticipate happening from Occupy Oakland in the near future? We've got the 3-month anniversary, at least, of Occupy Wall Street in New York coming up on the 17th. You anticipate anything happening in the near term?
I think on the 17th there's going to be some things happening. I don't know the specifics on what we're doing here. I think a lot of what we're going to start concentrating on is the Occupy Our Homes branch, and we're going to start trying to defend as many foreclosures as we can, because I think that that's going to bring a lot of the public on our side, too, that aren't already with us.
Yeah, I think that seems to be happening all around the country in terms of many occupations that have sort of are dealing with their post-eviction are taking this fight directly to the foreclosures.
Yeah, and I think that that's a good thing, because the camps have served their purpose. I mean, we know who are our allies at the beginning, and now we use those tents as a symbol to pop up those tents in people's front yards who are under foreclosure.
Oh, Jital, we're losing you a little bit. You gotta keep talking into your phone.
Oh, sorry. So what I was saying is, now that a lot of places have been losing their camps, that we can use those tents as a symbol to pop them up in people's front yards and defend their foreclosures, find out what bank is foreclosing on them, pop up a few tents in front of the bank, pop up a few tents in front of the house that's being foreclosed upon, and put the pressure on the banks to let people stay in their homes.
And tell me just a little bit about, how did you come to become a Ustreamer? I mean, how did you decide to do it?
Well, I had heard through sort of anonymous videos on YouTube that the protests were going to start happening in New York. And when I heard that they were going to be coming to San Francisco and popping up some tents in front of the Federal Reserve, I basically wanted to go and show them some support. So I emptied my house of food that I had in the cupboards, and brought down a couple of bags of food on October 5th to the people who are going to be camping out in front of the Federal Reserve. And about 20 minutes after I brought the food down there, they brought the Department of Public Works along with a little squad of protection riot cops and raided the camp the first day that they were there. And just out of instinct, I had the Ustream app already on my phone, and I just turned it on and sort of fell into it from there.
Oh, fascinating. And what do you do when you're not Ustreaming?
I take care of my dog. I'm HIV positive, and I around 2007 I got really sick. So this is sort of the first thing I've been doing since I've been on disability, and I feel clean even though I'm not getting paid for it. I mean, it's what I knew I would be doing since I was a kid, and I've just sort of fallen into it and made my own little mission in the movement.
That's great. And let me just ask you one more general question about what's happening on the West Coast.
Sure.
How are the West Coast occupations working together? I mean, it seems that a lot of the actions that are taking place, obviously San Francisco, Oakland, they're right across the bridge from each other. I imagine, you know, that close proximity allows for more coordination and cooperation. Do you have a sense of how the coordinating is happening on the West Coast?
A lot of it goes on Twitter. I mean, we all follow each other on Twitter. We keep each other informed on Twitter. What I spend a lot of my time on Twitter doing is I follow every little occupation that pops up in every little rural town across the country. Some of them have like a mere 50 followers, and a lot of them have a lot of good ideas coming out. So I spend my time reading a lot of the stuff that comes out of those little occupations and retweeting it, because now that I'm starting to get a few thousand followers on Twitter, I want to make sure the places like Occupy Fairhope, Alabama, who've got like 50 followers, that when they have some good ideas coming out, that we start to listen to all these little communities that are popping up. And I think there's a lot of good ideas coming out of a lot of places in the country right now.
All right, great. Well, people can follow you on at PunkBoyInSF on Twitter. We'll put that on our site at majority.fm. And it was Emma Goldman.
Yeah, and also the RU stream channel is ustream.tv/OccupySF. And a guy that I work in tandem with a lot is Okpo Show out of Oakland.
Right.
And he's at Okpo Show, and his ustream is ustream.tv/OccupyOakland.
All right, we'll put both those up on our site at majority.fm. And it was Emma Goldman who had that quote. I knew it.
All right, cool.
I appreciate it. All right, take it easy. Thanks for spending the time talking to us.
No problem. Thank you, Sam.
Bye-bye. All right, folks. That is the end of the lesser half of the program. We will now go into the better half of the show, wherein I will discuss that report on education. I will tell you about the Social Security payroll tax holiday that the Republicans passed in the House as a poison pill, which could lead us to another government shutdown. Also on the docket, this really ridiculous story about Lowe's. Oh, and in the better half, I will also tease who will be joining us to do the film reviews on Friday. What's that? Oh, and don't forget, folks, if you have some best of suggestions, go to the site in today's show thread, the top blog post. Put in there the three interviews that you think were the best in the past year that you've been listening. The three interviews that you think were the best.
If you already put them in yesterday's, you don't have to put them again. I'm going to go through the whole weeks until Friday, I believe we're going to end it.
Yeah.
Until Friday, I'm going to go through all the week's threads, and I'm going to grab all of your picks.
So you don't have to do it twice. And also, don't forget to give us a review on iTunes. Become a member if you can. Buy your coffee at justcoffee.coop, fair trade, organic, 10% coupon code, majority. A great holiday gift. Oh, and do we even thank Amanda for this amazing array of gifts she sent us? All sorts of food that you guys were supposed to take out of the office before I got in here today, because I don't eat candy in the morning. Pastry and cookies. Also, if you're buying junk through Amazon, buy it through our link at majority.fm. Just click on the support the show button, and you will you can find the Amazon link there. And our merch store is open. You can call us at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920, IMS at majority.fm. We'll see you in the better half.